It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I have good news for you, everybody. We have collected 100 coins over the past week. They were dotted about the place in the bathroom, in the kitchen, just, you know, outside the bus stop, all these different places. And all that means, because we've collected these 100 coins, we've unlocked another episode of Press X to Continue. You were wondering where that was going, weren't you?
I was.
You were wondering, Einel, where that was going. I could see it in your face. Don't worry.
I thought we were going to get some sort of extra life. I'd be like, okay.
Fruit, the gems, the diamonds, their hearts, they're all for show, basically, aren't they? It's all about
they're like, and now
things.
I'm investing them using our new sponsor, Trading.
Although we are open for that. It's the fact that I'm
in need of a new ISA.
Einel's here. Keza MacDonald is back with us, Guardians Games editor, top of the Press X trivia leaderboard. And Keza, let's get going then with an unsung hero game this week. You are back in the spotlight because you've selected one before. And whilst you tell us about your latest selection, I'm going to dig at what your previous one was. So what have you gone for this week? These are games, by the way. Every episode is someone's first episode. Mm-hmm. So I should explain this better. We start every week by talking about a game that we don't talk enough about and we need to show more love. Last week it was Theme Park with Reese doing things, the influencer. This week, Keza, it's over to you.
So we were just talking about playing guitar, right? When I was a teenager, I picked up a guitar. Most teenagers who pick up a guitar, it's because of Metallica, it's because of Green Day, like whoever it is that like inspires you to pick one up. Taylor Swift these days. I picked up a guitar because of a PlayStation 2 game called Guitaroo Man.
Yes, you did.
Which is a very strange, slightly surreal game about a kid who gets given a legendary guitar with which he then has to save the universe. It was my first introduction to rhythm games, like music games, which is a huge passion of mine throughout my teens and early 20s. Yeah. And so it's a story game, and in all these levels you have to do an insane guitar battle against a reggae shark, a transforming UFO, several different superheroes, some skeletons. Take your pick. They're all very mad. All of the music is extremely eclectic, so every level is like a different genre. So start out with like really hyperactive pop, and then there's a bee who does the blues that you have to do a battle against in a swamp. And so the way you play it is, it's quite hard to describe, but imagine kind of twirling patterns on the screen, and you have to follow that with the analog stick and press the circle button to get the rhythm right. And it feels a little bit like kind of, you know, like twist, like it's like playing a string guitar. It feels a little bit like that. It's got the same like the kinetic feel of it. And then when you have to defend, when the other player is attacking you with their music, you have to just kind of do kind of mad button bashing to defend yourself. It's very hard. It's very fun. It's very silly. And it has a wonderful, wonderful music soundtrack. Like, just brilliant. It's all original. And it was all by basically this one guy who, I can't remember his name. I'll have to look it up. This one guy did all the music and had the idea for the game, and he and his band ended up making the soundtrack. This game is recently finally playable again because it's come out on the PlayStation Classics Collection in June. So like for years and years and years, I couldn't play it, or if I could, I'd have to go and, you know, find an ancient PlayStation 2 and find a copy of it. But now you can play it really, really easily using PlayStation Classics, and it's still so fun. My kids were enjoying watching me play it the other day. And it has this wonderful legendary theme, it's called, which is like the climactic bit of the game. And it arrives in a kind of acoustic version, and then it arrives in this like wonderful soaring electric version. And that was the first thing I ever learned to play properly on guitar.
Oh, wow. That's good. And a really striking visual style, if I remember Guitaroo Man. It was like It's sort of a Japanese anime sort of vibe a little bit.
Yeah, I would say like kind of early 3D kids manga. That would be it. The mashup, yeah.
Because it's like it was that and Parappa the Rapper.
Parappa the Rapper.
They were the kind of early.
Yeah, that kind of like weird surreal story music game. You know, divorced from the like Bimani, like Beatmania, Guitar Freaks, all those ones that are just matching beats. You know, with your rhythms. There's a wraparound which is zany and has a lot of character. I've not played a game like that for a while. They should still exist.
Do you know what it was? I think it's like when we let all the kind of platforms start going CD based, and then it was like now we could get rid of the MIDI stuff and we can actually have some real instruments and real music in here.
Yeah.
Like all these developers just started having all these rhythm games just come up out of nowhere. Just like, yeah, let's just play some, have some weird, surreal stories. I mean, the Parappa the Rapper story is just makes no sense, but like it's
they're all about believing in yourself, aren't they?
Yeah, just believe in like,
believe in yourself, be a musician.
Is it fair to say that Parappa the Rapper sort of made it through, broke through into sort of broader culture a bit more than Guitaru Man did? I don't know.
I think pretty much everything has broken through to broader culture more than Guitaru Man did.
I went because is it just because of the visual cell? Because Parappa the Rapper was quite cool, wasn't he? He had his little hat on and he had his little microphone or whatever.
Yeah, I think also he was more on trend for the '90s. Parappa the Rapper, but also it's who made it, right? Like Parappa the Rapper was I believe a Sony studio, and this was made by Innes, who were like just a completely random. Random studio. I think, you know, there's also like, I always forget what this is called. Elite Beat Agents, the DS, the very famous manga based DS rhythm game is also in this zone. It's a great little subgenre of music game. Basically, if you like Parappa, totally give Guitaru Man a go. I think you'll enjoy it.
Was it? There was the other one, the DS one, Project Rub. Was it that one?
Rub Rabbits.
Rub Rabbits.
It's a Sega one. Yeah.
Yeah. So many of those.
Well, at all, I've not thought of these games for a long time. So, Kessel, thank you for putting a smile back on our face. It was Returnal that you chose last time.
Oh, there you go, yeah. Way,
so, which is an amazing game. Yeah. Whether or not it's
completely different vibe.
Totally different vibe. So Guitaru Man, if you're... you can access it again now, thanks to PlayStation Classic. So if you fancy a return to some of those beat-matching titles and you want to give Guitaru Man a go, you can actually do that, which is great. And keep your suggestions, by the way, for Unsung Hero games coming in on the Discord. Share them with us so we can talk about them on the pod. We love hearing your suggestions. Press X to Continue is proudly sponsored by you. That is right. If you want more Press X content, then hop over to our socials and see how you can support us and see how you can help us keep the content coming out. You can access live streams, bonus episodes, behind the scenes content, and even, if you're feeling fancy, some Press X to Continue merch. Okay then. Right, let's get into... I mean, I don't know if there's any point of us bothering really, I know, but we'll... Well, you know, we're sort of contractually obliged. We're not contractually, but actually, it's our podcast. You know, we don't have to do this.
They don't want to get beaten again. That's what's happening.
Because someone has taken the time to put a question in the group, so we're going to do it. So it's time for some trivia.
I love that I've sucked the fun out of this section of the show for both of you. I'm so sorry.
It's not even fun anymore, man.
This is the one where I have absolutely no idea. It's the one that's coming.
Now you can get involved in this by putting your questions in. You know what you can do, actually? If you can find a question that Keza can't answer, that would be great. And if you flag it as such, and then what we can do, we can hold... And we can't, actually, because we don't even look at the effing question. Right, anyway, somebody's put a question in, and here we are. We're going to answer it. This week, you don't need to know by now that Keza's number one. Imogen Mellor is still in second place. I'm in third. Einel's in fourth. And then there is a motley crew of people behind.
Lurking at the bottom.
Just looking at the leaderboard, though. We have some cool guests on PressX, don't we? We've got a lovely little community of people that come on air.
But they're all lurking at the bottom, though. That's
they're all lurking at the bottom. But I have to say, I'm so thrilled that people come and spend their time. Like you, Kez, are spending your time. You're the Guardians Games editor. Here you are, spending your Monday morning with us chatting games.
Oh, let's have a great time.
Hold on. How many wins has Kez got so far?
Well, she's number one. So I don't want to get involved into the logistics of Yes Andy Knows algorithm, because that's down to him and his work. She's got six correct answers.
I reckon if Keza gets to 20, It's flawless. We need to do something special.
Six. Okay, if you get to 10.
If you get to 10.
Six.
We'll do something special.
Yeah, okay.
Get me a cake.
Genuine. Okay, no, you know what? You know, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
If you get to 10, when, it's not an if.
Yeah,
when you get to 10 correct answers on press X, we're sending you a cake.
Delightful. Six.
All
right.
Basically, it all depends on Kez's diary, really. It's just... It's going to happen. It's just when is it going to happen?
For, if you're interested in the algorithm, since you have opened that can of worms, I know, this is how it works. So you have 16 correct answers.
Nice.
Right?
I was going to say, you must have more than me.
18 correct answers. Keza has 6. However, percentage-wise, Keza's way higher because obviously she's been asked fewer questions. We've asked about 100 questions and we've only got 16 and 18 of them right.
The percentage we get a lot wrong. Not good.
Anyway, Keza, queen of the leaderboard. The question this week is this.
Who wants to be a continuer?
What was the first video game to refer to getting an extra life as a one-up? What was the first video game to refer to getting an extra life as a one-up?
Oh, that's tricky.
So we're going early here, aren't we? We're going like...
Yeah.
Amiga days? Are we going earlier than that?
I think it's arcade, surely. It's got to be like early arcade games.
Because
I've seen it in Donkey Kong, but I reckon it's earlier. I reckon it's earlier than Donkey Kong. I reckon Donkey Kong would have got it from somewhere.
We're in sort of Space Invaders territory.
I think we might be somewhere in that zone.
Yeah.
I can't remember it saying one up in Space Invaders.
No, it was just... No, those little...
I can't remember. I don't think it did.
Maybe it was... Well, it's a good question. It's a tough question.
That's a really good...
We're going to have to mull on that one.
We have to mull it. We're going to mull it throughout the episode. Great question. The first game to refer to getting an extra life as a one up.
But there's like a documentary on it or something. must be.
We'll come back to that towards the end of the episode. Now, a question that's come in from the Discord about nostalgia. We talk a lot about nostalgia here. And what's interesting, as the pod has evolved, Einel, as we've sort of...
We're getting more nostalgic, aren't we?
No, I think not genuine. That's what I was going to say. We kind of are. Like, you know, Press X in this first iteration was a lot sort of like news... and reviews, keeping stuff current, things that were happening then and there. I think sort of because of the nature of my job at the time and where we were, where it was hosed and who's paying for it and all that stuff. That's kind of what we do. As we've done it more and more, Kez, I think we've sort of, based off what we're getting from the community as well, and based, I think, on our ages now. You moved out of London, Einel, I've had kids. These sort of big life moments do make you reflect a little bit more, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like things that were before. And so we've been sort of talking about that a lot more. And in the Discord, Mikkel's put this question in there saying the first modern console I got was the Xbox One X. Mm. So I missed out on the whole beginning of the Xbox era.
Wow.
And it's great that Xbox have restarted the game preservation efforts. However, I just tried Conquer Live and reloaded on Game Pass.
Yeah.
And what God, the heck is going on?
That was only the other day.
Right? So what were the game developers smoking back then? He says, this must be one of the strangest games I've ever played. And I'm wondering, slightly worried, says Mikael, what else is out there? And you've just sort of perfectly led us into this, Keza. Again, it's almost as if we planned it by talking about Guitaru Man, right? And Parappa the Rapper. And those games from like the 90s, noughties, they were just a little bit mad.
Yeah. Yeah, there were so many mad games back then, is the thing. It's hard now because it costs a lot of time, money, blood, sweat and tears to make a game. It always has. But more now, much, much more now than previously. And so you used to get a lot of just like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's something like Conker's Bad Fur Day is a good classic example of this, where it's an established developer with a great pedigree just doing something random for fun.
Yeah.
And obviously Live and Reloaded then ended up being a kind of riff on that. But, you know, my memory of the 2000s, particularly when I was a teenager, was that these games were everywhere. There was always something extremely weird or strange that you could play. And now it is a bit different. Like, there's still a lot of weird stuff out there, especially in the indie world. Like, just, you know, browse whatever came out on Steam in the last 3 days and you will see a bunch of strange games, but it doesn't feel like there's the same like permission for developers to just take wild punts at stuff now that there used to be.
And also ones that weren't, that aren't as necessarily as widely available or widely talked about. Yes, there are super niche, crazy, mad games out there that people will point to. You know, Gang Beasts is pretty mad when you think about it, right? But it's not as like played as Leisure Suit Larry was played, or
I forgot about that.
But that was a game that was like fairly well advertised and was, played by you know, at the time, or like talking about Conquer. Producer Dave's partner was playing Loco Roco the other day, which if you ever look at, is pretty mad actually.
Blobs have fun. Blobs on tour.
And you know the crazy thing about the Conquer Live and Reloaded, that was the censored version. The Nintendo version was way more filthier than the Xbox version. The Xbox remake was like they censored a lot of the stuff.
They did, yeah. But the thing is as well, that there was a lot. Do you remember that like the kind of 90s, 2000s thing where everything that was a mature game was actually a game that a 14-year-old would think was funny? Like the opposite of mature. Like the most immature game you could possibly be. You know, of course, at that time, a large portion of the gaming audience was 14 and did think it was really funny.
Team Buddies on the PS1, and it was basically like a team shooter game, but the main appeal was it was like South Park and the characters swore. That was what it was.
Yeah.
It was just loads of swearing. It's
South Park era.
But like, yeah, there was so many of those crazy games. Bishy Bashy, like, I remember you playing with my friends, used to be fun. I spoke about it before, one of my favorite games, Incredible Crisis, where it's just about a family going about a crazy day trying to get grandma's birthday cake, and there's aliens, there's bank robberies, there's snowboarding, there's all sorts. Here's a game that they don't make anymore. Hold on.
All right, Aina's off to get a
game. Don't make him like this anymore. By the way, he's off to browse the shelf.
If you're just listening to this on the Spotify,
here's a game. They don't make this anymore. Hey You Pikachu.
Have you ever wanted to talk to a Pikachu via a microphone that barely works? It's the game for you.
Just comes with a microphone and it's just, hey, you say, hey, Pika, do this. Hey, Pika, do that.
Seaman, speaking of games where you speak to a creature. Seaman, where Leonard Nimoy is a fish and you chat to him in a tank and that's the game.
Yeah, and he just says weird stuff to you.
I think, Mika, I think Keza sort of nailed it a little bit then. I think it was less that the developers then were sort of on something or a bit madder back then. I just think the barrier to entry was just lower and the risk factor was therefore lower, which is why you had so many more movie tie-in games back then, because you could knock up a James Bond or a what's that film with Vin Diesel in it?
Fast and the Furious?
The sci-fi one. Riddick.
Oh, Riddick.
You can knock those games up in 9 months, a year or whatever, and stick them out. Whereas these days, you just can't, which is why it took so long to get the new Bond out or whatever. Mm. And maybe public sensibilities were different as well.
We were just more likely to take a chance on things.
Yeah.
It was just like, because there wasn't like 1,000 games like there are now, like 30 video games coming out every week. Like before, it was just like, oh, there's a game out. What is it? It's this weird thing.
And I also think like there wasn't, and I may be romanticizing here, but now if you want to make a game, you want to get it greenlit, you want to get it funded, you have to come in with like, here's how many millions we're going to sell, and here's like the exact, here's all the market research, and here's the demographic, blah, 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 blah. I reckon then you could just be like, I want to make a game that's set on a space station and there's a lot of animals there, but the animals are all robots and you're a microchip and you can possess all of the robot animals. And people go, cool, sure, make that, that sounds fun. And it wasn't, you didn't have to go in there with like, it's got a 5-year plan, it's got a 10-year plan, it's going to make $1 billion. Like you didn't have to necessarily do that. Like when you talk to game developers from this time and you're looking for like the big story of why this game came to be, the story is often just like, we thought it would be cool and so we made it.
Yeah.
It kind of boils down to that, and people were able to, you know.
Well, they still try to do that. I know like Double Fine, they tried with Kiln? Like, it just came out and the Lighthouse game that they did, which was great. Like it's only like 4 to 5 hours long. I loved every minute of it, but it's one of those games that's like, yo, this is not going to sell anything. But if you play it, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic game.
Well, look, if you remember some of the madder titles from the late 90s, noughties, then let us know, get involved, find us in the Discord, comment on social media, all that good stuff. Now, Keza, so we we like giving our listeners a little peek behind the curtain here. So on the we did a Patreon live stream because we've got the Patreon up now. One of the things you can get if you're on the Patreon is you can get access to mine and 9L's live streams that we do once a month. And one of our Continue Clubbers from the Patreon lounge was asking us, oh, when's Keza coming back on the show? And as it happened, you were supposed to be back with us that week, but then you ended up spending some time in hospital, right? And so that made us realise, I suppose, how much games can be good friends in tricky periods of time, right? So I hope you're all right now, clearly, because you're with us and we're chatting away. But how did you find solace in games at that tricky time?
Yeah, I've been in and out of hospital for the last kind of four months or so. And it's one of those things where you need when you are sick, especially if you're sick for quite some time, whether that's like a chronic illness. So I've had some experience with that as well, where you're sick for quite a long time, or whether it's just you're in hospital for a while and you don't really want to be thinking about where you are and why you're there.
Yeah.
Video games have always been like something that I immediately go to because, more so, especially if you're sick, you sometimes can't concentrate on a book. You sometimes can't, you know, even watching a film or watching TV, sometimes that's not like enough to get you out of your head. And games have been like for my whole life. I remember I had like my appendix out when I was 11 and I begged my mum to bring in my N64 for me so that I could play Zelda in the hospital. So through various periods of like illness in my life, of which I've had a few, I've always played a lot of games during those times. Mm. And I think like a lot of people play games... also, you hear a lot of people talk about how games have helped them with like tough mental health times or just things like breakups or grieving, other kind of like rough times. And I think games are uniquely suited. Like all art saves lives in that way. You know, art is an escape. But I think video games are kind of uniquely suited for many of us because they are so absorbing and they are like engaging. Like they get your brain moving. They're not kind of completely passive. So they make you feel like you're doing something. They keep your brain happy at a time when maybe you can't do much or, you know, a lot of your agency has been taken away because you're in hospital or like some bad thing is happening to you in the real world. Like a video game gives you just a sense of agency back and reminds you that you're a thinking human who still has the capacity for enjoyment and joy. And so I've had a few games that I returned to like over times like that.
What did you find yourself playing this time around?
This time, so I'm not a big replayer of games, right? Once I'm done with the game, I'm kind of done with it. I never really feel drawn to it. So it's always quite random because it tends to be whatever I happen to be into. Last year when I was unwell for quite some time, I played Blueprints for like 70 hours. Fantastic puzzle game. It's a wonderful, wonderful, like
loved it.
Mysterious puzzle game, very absorbing. So I can never tell what it is that's going to get me. This time, it was Titanium Court, which is... let me see. It's a surreal Shakespearean inspired match 3 strategy game where you are you're a random lady who's been transported into a fairy realm and you're now their queen and you have to run the court, the Titanium Court. And it's very funny. It's a very, very funny game. Every day you basically fight this endless battle against dragons, dire goats, whatever else is out there, and you fight the battle by rearranging the battlefield of match 3 tiles. But what makes it so absorbing and what really, you know, helped me out particularly in hospital was that it's never the same every day. So it's very, very different. Every day is different. Lots of random, unexpected. We're talking about weird games. That's one of the weirdest games I've ever played. At one point I got to the end of the day and there was like the boss fight with the dragon. And it said, you've done this fight before. Do you want to watch a musical performance instead? I was like, okay. And so the game then transported me to a little musical performance where the solo developer of this game sang me a song about salmon. And I was like, and this was like 2 a.m. in a hospital ward. And I'm like, is this happening? Am I hallucinating? What's occurring? And because it was such a strange, funny, unexpected game, because it kept, you know, doing things I wasn't expecting, it was a perfect game for the circumstances I was in. But also perfect. It's just a great game in general. I would recommend it to anybody. But yeah, obviously in my job as a games journalist, which I've been doing for such a long time, when I speak to people about what games mean to them, a lot of the time people mention tough times in their life that games have helped them through. You know, I think it's a lot of gamers have these games that are attached to these times that may have been difficult to get through and that games have helped with.
Yeah. producer David talks a lot about playing Uncharted 2 when he was going through heartbreak. You remember those games, don't you, Einar? Yeah. I'm sure you've got some examples of ones you played as well.
I think most of the games on my shelf are like going through certain things in my life and stuff like that. And I think, not to bring it up again, but it's why like physical games are so important, because it's like it means something to us. That's why like so many people go to developers to get them signed. But like, I remember when I... tore my meniscus in my knee, had surgery. I couldn't leave the house for like 2 weeks. So I ended up buying a Wii U, and then just like playing Nintendo Land. I had friends come round to kind of see me, like cook some food for me, because I couldn't really move and stuff like that. And we'd sit down, play Nintendo Land together, and the whole bunch of Rayman Legends and things. Had the best time, and like it really made me forget about the pain that I was going through in my leg and stuff like that. Like, all of that went away. I wasn't even taking the medication for it in the end, because I was like, I don't need the pain management, because I'm having so much fun and I'm so engrossed in playing these games that it's making me forget how much pain I'm in. And it's like,
that's great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That is actually really vital. Like, yeah. When you're in pain management is a lot about finding ways to stay engaged with life and get your mind off it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, games are so good for that. They can honestly help you take less meds, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, that's what it did for me. I was like, I don't agree with that one. And I was like, I need to take something. But then I'm playing Wii U instead. And I'm like, oh, wow. The whole day's gone by and I'm fine.
Which is not ideal, Keza, when you're trying to type a book, right?
No.
Which is what you were spending.
Yeah, I just finished. I basically finished the book, and then I got a nerve infection in my right. So it took my right arm out of action for quite some time, and it remained very painful for a long time after that. And when you have a kind of long period of pain like that, you can end up popping pills all day because it's the only thing to do. But like, honestly, anything else that helps you not think about it is incredibly useful. So they actually talk quite a lot about play in not just games, but play in general and management of chronic pain, whether that's like social play with other people or it's playing games. You know, playing a game with someone else, although I couldn't use my right hand, which was very annoying. I had to like revert to games that I could play with my left hand only, which was quite
hard. Bring the Wii controller back out.
Exactly. Yeah,
left-handed Wii, though, is hard. That's hard.
Yeah, I had to play a lot of phone. I was playing a lot of phone games for a while.
A study in 2009 by the University of East Carolina found that playing casual games like Peggle and Bejeweled improved people's mental health. People who were suffering from depression, it could improve them by, I don't know how they measure this, by up to 50%, according to them, which I don't know about the numbers involved in that, but you can, like, in terms of the idea that games can help you. I did a radio series for the World Service about how play helps people at all different ages of your life, whether you're, you know, going through dementia in your 80s or whether you're a kid growing up, and how that can help. I find myself at periods where I've like been stressful or whatever, but I'll tend to go to games that are like a bit of a comfort blanket. Do you know what I mean? So I don't want to be challenged in the game I'm playing, but I still want to be inputting something in. I want to be interacting. So for example, when we had our first child, that's a very stressful time, because you're like, am I going to keep this bundle thing alive? Have I fed it enough? Are they warm enough? Have they whatever? And so I found myself, when I was doing the late in the night shift, so my wife could sleep while in between like feeding bits, Joseph would be sleeping, so I couldn't really do anything, but I couldn't full concentrate on telly. I played so much Crusader Kings 2, because it was like, I could pause
great
it.
Great game.
If there was a problem, if I needed to shush him, or if I needed to like pick him up or something, I could pause it, fine, and then I could just pick it back up again. Or I could put him in the sling. Played a bit of Elden Ring and hated it, but I had him in the sling for that.
It's amazing the power games have, man.
Yeah, I don't want to play Elden Ring because it's using too much brain power. I need something that's simple.
Yeah.
I just need to tax this town some more.
Well, Steph,
and,
that's why,
you know, whatever.
That's why so many people like gravitated towards Animal Crossing in the pandemic.
It was 100%. That was the perfect game for that time. Because I also I've noticed this as well. Like, I was trying to play. So when I was sick this year, I was trying to play Saros, which is the sequel to Returnal. It was too much. It was very stressful. And because, you know, when you're ill and in pain, your nervous system is like on alert anyway, right? So if you're playing a game that's like, oh, threat, react quickly, then it actually felt very unpleasant. And I had a similar experience when I was pregnant and I was trying to play Bloodborne. And it just felt horrible. Yeah. I was like, I'm not having a good time. Like the feeling that used to be like adrenalizing and like galvanizing and fun is actually just very unpleasant right now because I'm in a my body is in a state where it doesn't like threat. And so when you're you need a game that's quite gentle, Pocopia would have been perfect. I wish I hadn't already rinsed that earlier in the year. Yeah. Wonderful game for just noodling about. Stardew Valley I played a lot when my babies were tiny. Don't remember any of it, but I played a lot of it.
I'm a bit nervous ahead of gate. Like, I can remember going up to do an interview at Radio 1 for my first sort of job at Radio 1, and I did the train journey up. And I'd prepared everything I needed to prepare. I couldn't do anything else. I was coming from West Wales, so I needed 3 hours on the train. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to take my mind off? How nervous I was. I really wanted this job. I just played Football Manager. I played Football Manager Mobile.
Hold on, Steph. You were playing that anyway. Come on.
I was. But it just, because it was so familiar and it was like, and it was very safe, very calming. I know the context of it. I could just, spend my time with Sir Maurice Silver at MBE, who was my Football Manager character. He comes with me every single time I play Football Manager.
That's so adorable.
Sir Maurice. Hold me and producer Owen are going to do a short film about Sir Maurice. That's going to happen. I'm saying it out loud, Owen. I'm putting it into the ether. But yeah, it's about safe games. So look, if you feel free to share. We appreciate that it can be very personal and to you. But if you have a story of something similar and you want us to talk about or share or discuss on the pod, let us know, because I think I would like to think that we create a safe space to do those things. Because games can be brilliant sometimes to get you through rough patches, can't they? Mm-hmm. Talking of rough patches, we've not had to talk about this for a long time, so we're not going to spend too long on it, but just a little update, because loot boxes, just...
You look so tired.
He's been covering it for like... How long have you been covering loot boxes?
How long have you been covering it for, Kez? This is 2014 for me, 2015.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Forever. It's one of those ones that never... You know what has finally died? When I started out, the constant question all the time was, are games art?
And that's gone. And violence,
I spent 15 years doing, do games cause violence and are games art? 15 years I spent answering the same questions about those two things on everywhere for forever. And then finally, I just noticed, really, since the pandemic, people have stopped asking those questions and started asking instead about loot boxes.
We're talking loot boxes. I've just closed all my screens now for some reason. But I'm just talking about it because basically FIFA is now going to be a 16-rated game. Mm-hmm. Because it's always been a 3-rated game. Sorry, it's not FIFA anymore. It's EAFC, new one's going to be a 16-rated game because of the microtransactions, the loot boxes inside it. Ultimate Team basically makes a shed. We talked about The Sims last week with Rhys in terms of like EA trying to monetize that. And you can understand it. We know games are making more money, et cetera, et cetera. Do we think people are going to listen to the PEGI rating? Would you stop an 8-year-old from playing EAFC now? Maybe it's not the online modes. I don't know.
Well, I have a real life case study in that I have a 9-year-old who's obsessed with football and enjoys these games.
Yeah.
I will let him play in exactly the same way as I do now, and I will just completely ban Ultimate Team as a thing. Like, at the moment, my son is free to play those EAFC, but he can't play online and he's not allowed to play any of the Ultimate Team stuff. So that's what I will do. But you can't expect any random parent off the street to know the intricacies of all the different modes of FIFA, which ones are gambling adjacent and which ones aren't. You know, I think that the 16 rating does serve a purpose in that it kind of hopefully should educate a little bit. Like, you're going to look at that and go, hang on, why is that a 16? And then maybe that might help.
It's a football game.
Maybe that might help people to kind of understand, because I think I honestly think it should be age gated, like Ultimate Team. I think you should have to have like an age.
Yeah.
You should have to have an account. It's like they're planning with Facebook and everything. Not Facebook. Oh my god, I'm so old. With TikTok and Instagram, like you should have to have like a gate where it's like, if you're not this old, you can't play this bit of the game. I think that would be...
It's a lot trickier to enforce these days, I would think, because it was easier to enforce when I worked in like a game shop. It was easier to say, okay, this kid is under this particular age. Do you have ID or you can't buy this game or you need your parents to come in to buy it? And then you'd explain to the parent, are you happy for this kid to play this game? But now, because everything's going all digital, I don't know, like everyone just gets around it.
That's such a good point. Like, how do you enforce? Yeah, and
all you just need is a gift card, and then you just download the game, and it's like boom.
I remember when my stepson, who's 20 now, when he was about 8 or 9, one of his little friends was playing Grand Theft Auto 5. That's how long it's been, you guys, since we had a new... but he was playing Grand Theft Auto, and I remember, like, you know, I actually did say to his mum, I'm like, do you know what's in this game? And she's like, oh, I know it's an 18, but he's really good at it. And I'm like, no, that's not... It's not a difficulty level.
That's not about that.
That's not what it is. I remember showing her a video on YouTube of like one of the first person prostitution scenes that's in Grand Theft Auto 5. And I was like, just so you know, this is in the game. Little Freddy was not playing that game much longer, I can tell you.
I can remember having conversations with my sister about like my nephew was big into Fortnite and wanted to try Call of Duty. And I was like... Probably the single player stories are actually really engrossing and it'd be quite spooky. Would you let him watch Saving Private Ryan? No, then don't let him play Call of Duty. Was the sort of I suppose hopefully what might actually on the flip side of this, what might happen is you might actually have a bit more of a conversation around age ratings and games as a result of this shift, because it's such a significant franchise, because so many people play it, because so many parents expose their kids to the game. Hopefully that does lead to a bit of, why is this 16?
But then Ultimate Team's been around for ages.
It's so funny, isn't it?
It's pulling in so much money.
It's so funny that it's like $5 billion.
$5.5 billion.
That doesn't surprise me. That's not surprising.
No, sorry, I like a substantial portion... Substantial portion of the $5.5 billion of annual revenue it made from selling add-on content for its games.
I'd say 80%. Ultimate Team.
80%. Look, how do we feel about Ultimate Team? Like, just in general, how do we feel about it?
So I haven't played... I had a period where I played it a lot, but I would never spend any real money. Money in it. So I would do it the old-fashioned way. Because they do give, to be fair to the... And I actually, playing it that way... had a nice time with it but then I wasn't chasing, my personality isn't like trophy chasing. I was having a nice team collecting and putting a little player team together and seeing how good I was comparing players of equal level. And I had quite a nice time. I didn't care if I didn't have the shiny Bale or the whatever, that ages for when I was playing it now. But then if I was younger, I can understand, I can see why it is this whole slippery slope
and
argument.
It's 100%. So easy to justify as well, because it's like where we used to collect stickers for, like, back in the day. It was like, oh, I'm only going to spend, like, 50p on it. And, like, you spend 50p on it, I'm just going to spend another 50p. It's every 50p every now and then. And then, but it all adds up. And
because my football-obsessed son, he collects those match tax cards. And I said, we're not doing Panini stickers, we're doing the match tax cards, because just in my head, I'm like, they're just nicer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know they're still a valueless object, but they're just a nicer thing to have. And also they have the Scottish teams in. But the Panini sticker book, like, I remember reading a thing, because obviously the World Cup ones, it costs, if you like wanted to complete that sticker book, it would cost on average like £1,500.
See?
Yeah.
In stickers.
We had one for the World Cup, right? I mean, we got them knowing we're never going to get anywhere near completing this. We're probably going to spend about £30 on stickers, but it's just going to be a fun activity to try and get the kids, who are only tiny, engaged with football and the sport, and the fact that every morning we're going to have to watch the highlights. And so it was like, so when the highlights are on, why isn't Bluey on? Bluey's not on because the highlights are on, but we're going to do some stickers as we, right? I knew we didn't get anywhere near
your household.
We didn't get anywhere near, but it was quite a fun activity in the short term. But if you're a completionist, or if you're someone that can get caught up in that stuff, you can just see the difficulties
it's
of
the Pokemon
it, right?
cards
or
it's Pokemon
yeah
cards.
Or if you are a 9-year-old boy. Like, the thing is, I think Ultimate Team is fine. Like, great. It's you know, it's expensive fantasy football. If you're a grown man and you want to spend, I don't know, £500 on Ultimate Team, absolutely fill your boots. I think absolutely should not be exposed to children, because kids can't self-regulate, like, neurologically. They can't self-regulate on this kind of stuff. Like, we don't let kids play slot machines for the same reasons. Yeah. And I have a real problem with the way that these gambling adjacent mechanics have infiltrated all play spaces over the last 10 years. Since we started talking about loot boxes and stuff, it's become so standardized. Roblox runs entirely off, like, you know, incentivizing kids to essentially take a spin on something, come back every day, you know, virtual currencies, all this kind of stuff. And I have seen with my own eyes the effect that then has on young people. and just the way that they process wanting something. You know, your kid wants an ice cream.
Yeah.
They can't get over the fact that they want the ice cream. And then the ice cream van goes away and they forget about it 5 minutes later. The problem isn't the games. It encourages kids to come back. And they think about it every single hour of every single day.
That and social media as well. You go onto YouTube, you'll see, right, I'm going to open 100 packs. Hopefully, literally, I'm going to get me.
It's really sick. It's bad, isn't it? Like, YouTube is banned in my house. Like, that's my strictest parent thing. Okay. Like, because I cannot be bothered to curate it, right? Yeah. I'm just like, there's a million things you can watch and do. YouTube's just not one of them. I'm not having it. But obviously, my nine-year-old, he watches YouTube at other kids' house, and he watches all these pack opening things where it's just these. And it is literally just a gambling video. And so this is it. Like, I don't have a problem with Ultimate Team. I honestly think it seems, you know, I have adult friends who've spent tons of money on it and regret it, but like, they're grown-ups, they can do what they like. But I do have a problem with the way that these things are marketed so specifically to kids who have no kind of defenses against this kind of thing. So I think the 16 rating's important in that way.
Absolutely. And if you obviously, if you're EA, you're going to keep the game mode in because it's making you so much money that you couldn't
it's
you couldn't
not getting take taken out. The football gets taken out before that does.
But I think that, like, the thing is, FIFA, I keep calling it FIFA, it's been how many years now, Stefan?
We're never going to stop, Stefan. It is what
EAFC, right? The rest of it, the bits of it that you are letting your son play, it's actually a fantastic game. It's a football sim, great. You can do leagues, you can do the World Cup. I was playing through the World Cup because it was on sale and I was like, oh, I fancy going to FIFA. And I was trying to do the World Cup. There's loads you can still actually do in the game. You don't have to play. You don't have to be
just
part
the conversation's
of
not around that stuff, though.
No, I know.
And this is the problem, that you're trying to extricate one from the other. You have to have quite a high knowledge of what the game is and how it works.
You've got to be engaged. And this is the thing that a lot of parents will ask me a lot about, like, oh, how do we... And I'm trying to manage this now with my son. You know, we've been playing Shredder's Revenge, the Turtles game together, and it's been actually really joyous. We completed it the other day, right? And when we beat Super Shredder, oh, my God, it was such a moment. I was so thrilled. I got a bit emotional. It was our first
That's
time
so great. That's
together.
So great.
Doing something, do you know what I mean? I was like, Joseph, press your super, press the triangle, you know. And he's telling me, like, he's kind of to give you pizza, daddy, you know, all that stuff, right? It was so amazing. But it's like, I want it to be that all of the time, and not like when we played a little bit of Angry Birds together. It was like, oh, I want to get the new hat for the Angry Bird. Mm. It's not the flinging mechanic was. Became secondary because the Angry Birds I thought we were playing was not the one that appeared. You know what I mean? It is the I need the new hats. Oh, we need to get this power up. Oh, there's a new bird to collect. So okay, fine. What happened to the old game where I was just flinging things across the screen? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, play for play's sake is really important for kids, I think. This is, you know, this is partly why, you know, I talk about this quite a lot for my job, obviously. But like, I don't like the infiltration of like algorithmic big tech bullshit into play. Like, play is play and it's sacred, actually, especially for children. Yeah. And I don't like the way that it's now almost impossible to buy a nice game for your kid's iPad or Kindle or whatever. It's almost impossible to just pay $2.99, buy a little game they can play. Instead, it's all download it, get pestered for a subscription, get pestered for an extra hat, like everything, or, you know, a million notifications. Like, it's almost, there's this game called Sneaky Sasquatch, which is a absolutely top tier, brilliant mobile game from the golden age of mobile games. It's so good. You are a Sasquatch. Yeah. No one's allowed to know. You put on rubbish disguises. You steal people's food. And it's a wonderful little capsule world. So my son recently completed this game. He has played it for nearly 500 hours. 486 hours to be precise, since he was 3 and couldn't even read. He's been playing this Sasquatch game, and you know, there's not a single microtransaction. It's an Apple Arcade like premium game. I paid for it once. He downloaded it. He has been playing it for 500 hours and just having a beautiful time with it. And he's now he's 9, can read, has played through the whole story, has now actually exhausted it of options.
Yeah,
and that's gorgeous. That is a lovely like play experience that he's had with that game. It's so hard now, you know, you want to be able to provide that, and unless you buy a £400 Nintendo Switch and a Nintendo game or whatever, it's actually increasingly hard to provide like a play space for your kids that's free of loot boxes and whatever
else. Especially when they get to a certain age, like in the early, like for early young toddlers, which is the world I'm inhabiting at the moment, the CBeebies stuff is actually pretty good. But once you want to get past, you know, mixing the cake stuff together, like it, then it's like, okay, now I need, you know, they as we all know, they develop quickly, and it's like, oh, actually, well, I need more than that now.
Have you played the Bluey game?
I haven't. Is it good?
there's two Blue games. One is terrible subscription free-to-play nonsense. One is brilliant. The one with the magic pen. I think it's called Blue and the Golden Pen. It's a co-op platform puzzle game. Absolutely delightful, Stefan. Highly recommend. Obviously, you will be doing all of the solving of everything, but the kid will be well on board with it. It's really good fun.
We might do that next day because obviously we've completed
finished
Stretch Revenge.
Finished it.
Yeah, this is it. It's clearly designed for like an adult to play with a kid, and it's like just about engaging enough to keep you and me interested. But like the kid will think it's delightful if they love Bluey. It's very nice. It's the first good kids game I've played in a while.
That's good to know. That's a great recommendation. Thank you. Shredder's Revenge, we played it on the chill, you know, the easy mode, obviously, because
I get it.
Even the last party, I tell you what, I was sweating. I was basically doing it on my own, you know. Joseph wasn't...
He's just tagging along. He's dead weight. He's like,
I want to be Shredder on this level. Well, you can't. Why can't I be Shredder? Because we haven't leveled him up yet. That's why. We've leveled up Leonardo. You've got to be Leonardo for this one because he's got an extra life, which means you're going to last longer. He's like, but I want to be Shredder though. Okay. Be Shredder then. No, not Shredder, Splinter. You know what I mean? Right, we've actually got a review to pack in super quick. Also, just to remind you that we are now on Patreon, okay? Because we love doing the podcast. We want to keep going. There's a lot of hard work that goes on behind the scenes to make the podcast. We think we've got super high production editorial values. That happens because of the hard work that goes on behind the scenes. So we're trying to keep the lights on. So we appreciate every single one of you that has signed up to the Patreon. You're also getting a live stream every month of myself, Ainelli, getting an extra episode every single month of our top 5 series. So do come and join us in the Patreon to help us keep this thing going. If you're not in a position to do that, that is totally cool. Nothing's going to change. Every Tuesday, free episodes for you. But if you want more Press X in your life, then come and find us in the Patreon. Right, just aware of, I know it's a podcast that can last forever. However, in real life terms, we've been talking too much. So, Ainel, tell us a bit about Splatoon Raiders. You've been playing it.
Splatoon Raiders, I have.
He's got the t-shirt on.
Hey, well, speaking of games, this is a Nintendo looter shooter with no microtransactions in it. So which is great. I've always been a fan of the Splatoon series. It's Nintendo's take on how can they join the third-person shooter market without blood and guts and all of that stuff. And Splatoon is a really great way of doing that. This is single-player focused adventure campaign with co-op multiplayer elements added in there. And I think it's really clever how they've done it. So what it is, it's a game about you land on a mystery island, and it's just about trying to get as much treasure as possible. And it's basically what they've done is the Salmon Run mode in Splatoon 2 and Splatoon 3, they've given it its own game and have expanded it. And basically it's a game where you jump on a level, you got to kill a bunch of salmon, get their eggs, and then get out. That's it. And every level's different, and it expands from there, and it grows from there, different challenges. And because you're playing this in single player, it's all about rewarding you. And so you're constantly getting rewarded with like either new weapons, new add-ons, new perks, new gadgets. Even if you fail a level, you still get experience points, you still get things. So there's no frustration for losing. So every time you lose or fail a level, you're still gaining things, and you can kind of mod it, and you can crank and fine tune your weaponry, then go back in again and see if you can do a bit better. And what Nintendo is really good at with this particular one is if you fail a level, there's a button where it says call for help, and you can just press it, and then it puts you into like a multiplayer instance for that level where you and two other people join you. You try and take on the level, and then once you do it, you go back to single player, and it's like, fantastic. It's such a great way of like implementing multiplayer. You can do the entire game co-op with friends. You can have like a private session. Everybody has their own kind of save, and you can play the game together. Or for those moments where you find it a bit difficult, you can either turn the difficulty down, or you can just say call for help, and then it'll put you in a multiplayer instance. Two other people join you, you try and do the level together, and then they disband afterwards.
Fantastic. That is interesting. I'm not thinking I've seen that before, I know.
Same. I'm trying to think. There's games where you can join people mid-game and help.
Elden Ring had a bit of that.
Yeah. But like, where I love the fact that it boots you back to single player straight after. It's like seamlessly. It doesn't say now you're back in single player. It's just the level's done and you're back on your bolt and you're doing your thing again.
Monster Hunter lets you do that. And it's one of the best things about it, because this is one of those games where you're just like, oh, sure, I'll go help this person out for... I'm playing Splatoon Raiders with my littler son. What a riot. We're having an amazing time with it. It's really great.
I love Monster Hunter, but their multiplayer thing is convoluted as hell, just to play with friends. Yeah. Rise did it fantastically, and then Wilds, they went backwards a bit, and I'm like, hold on, I just want to play my friend. He's on a different level, so I got to catch up to him. And it's like, But yeah.
It did get annoying, didn't it?
But Splatoon Raiders, I'm having a blast with it. It's way better than I expect it to be. It's £40 digital and £50 brand for physical, I think. Nintendo selling it for.
So that's about, it's a little bit cheaper actually than a lot of Nintendo games, isn't it? I mean, it's still...
Yeah, they're doing a lot of that at the minute, especially like with Star Fox and things like that. They're just little nuggets of games that they're throwing in there to people. Rhythm Heaven, I think, was the same. Not quite the full £80 of Mario Kart, but...
Yeah. Well, look, it's got a Metacritic score of 81. If that sounds like a bit of you, then check it out and let us know what you think in the Discord afterwards. Right, let's finish off with our trivia answer this week. The question was, what was the first video game to refer to getting an extra life as 1-up? Keza, what are you going to go with?
I don't know this one, and I think it's going to be something really, really early. Like somewhere in the region of Asteroids or something like that.
Okay.
I'm just going to randomly guess Centipede.
Centipede's going super early. Keza, what are you saying, you know?
Oh, no, something like Galaxian or Double Dragon.
Double Dragon. What a game that was, by the way.
Let's go for that. I know, that's in the night. That was, what, late 80s? But yeah, we would have had one else before that.
Dragon. But, hey. Oosh. I'm saying Pac-Man. Don't know why, just because I am. The answer is from 1985. The game is Super Mario Bros. The concept of lives is widely thought to have arrived in Space Invaders, although it's unclear... The first game that allowed players to get extra lives through collectibles or through their score. However, 1-Up first appears in Super Mario Bros. With the green 1-Up mushroom.
Oh, of course. The arcade one, isn't it? Yeah.
So there we have it. When you're still
I would have guessed Donkey Kong, and that would have been just slightly wrong. It would have really annoyed me. Because, of course, Mario Bros. Was,
Well, you still...
Great question.
Great question.
Fantastic question.
Kezia, you're still number one. Einel, you getting that wrong means that Benedict Townsend is leapfrogged you. You're down to fifth.
Can we talk about that? That was the first time I played that game, was the Atari version. And it blew my mind. I was like, it's a Nintendo game on Atari. I was like, what the hell?
What's going on? Doesn't make any sense. Well, Keza, thank you very much for being with us this week, and we're glad to hear that you're back on the mend. Appreciate your time. We will see you very soon. We will talk about you every single week because you're
always a delight
of the leaderboard. And we will be back next Tuesday for more Press X to continue. And of course, remember, if you want more of us in your lives, then you can go and join the Patreon, and we will see you all very soon. Bye-bye.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.